Hello again, this is Swan.
I'm Chris.
And you are listening to
Ink and Worm on Radio Free Brooklyn.
So enthusiastic about it. Actually, we are, because we're promoting the Bushwick Book Club, who is having a show this coming weekend, April 8th. Mark your calendars, 8:30. Mark the time. At the bar Little Skips, mark the location. It's going to be awesome, because they are celebrating the book How to Make White People Laugh by Nagin Farsad, which is a very solid book. I read it. I laughed. Chris?
I had a couple chuckles.
Some chuckles. So if you're looking for some amusing content, but also maybe some serious, you know, it's a great mix. And surprise, Nagin Farsad is actually going to be at the show. So
that's pretty awesome.
That's pretty cool. She's going to come see all the things that have been made.
Including our film.
Including a film that we made, which is a little bit embarrassing, but it is what it is, and it's done, and you're going to see it, and I just hope you laugh. Anyways, so we hope you enjoy the show.
Welcome to the first Bushwick Book Club podcast. You'll be hearing songs and interviews of songwriters who contributed to our first show of the year. The songs are all recorded live from that first show of 2017 at Bar Bez in Park Slope, Brooklyn, which, if you haven't been there, is an unassuming little spot to hear the best local and touring musicians in the area because it's built over an ancient American Indian party ground. That's my theory, anyway. This is the first Bushwick Book Club podcast, and it's of the first book of 2017. We always do Vonnegut in January. This year's Vonnegut choice was Man Without a Country. Yeah. Charlie's here.
And we're with Devin Jason.
Devin Jason in Park Slope, Brooklyn.
Howdy, y'all.
You're kind of like the official Bushwick Book Club mixologists.
Just calling us anytime you need a theme drink.
I'm really impressed because you made 12 different cocktails for each of the 12 chapters of the book. That's really thorough.
Plus one bonus for the afterward.
And Vonnegut himself was not an alcoholic, but he knew many. And sometimes he featured alcoholics in his books. But honestly, like reading his books, sometimes, wow, the point of view is so bleak that it makes you, you know, it could drive you to drink or, you know, kill yourself or something, but
I had a few drinks reading this one.
You did? I had a couple suicidal thoughts. Yay, more songs about books. All right, okay. Nothing like a little Vonnegut to get you started with the year.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, speaking of getting started, what's our first cocktail?
Chapter 1, Bird Poop. So the setup for this is a joke he mentions. What's the white stuff in bird poop?
What is it?
That's bird poop, too.
Ha!
So, in celebration of that, we're going to try to make a delicious cocktail that looks like bird poop and hopefully tastes even better.
I better get the cream.
Yeah, the basic idea is we're doing a riff on a Brandy Alexander, which is one of those old-fashioned cocktails that no one drinks anymore because no one likes cream in their drinks anymore. But it's a delicious thing, and we're gonna dig it.
Don't people still drink white rations?
I think they do, yeah, because of the Big Lebowski.
So Jason's mixing up
Brandy Alexander, creme de cacao, cream, and brandy.
Mm-hmm.
So here's our Brandy Alexander. The crowning touch to Brandy Alexander is always nutmeg. And we have some fresh nutmeg here.
It's so pretty.
It is quite pretty.
It looks kind of like bird poop.
If that fell in my hair, you know, I don't think I'd mind at all.
Wow.
What do you think?
That's really strong.
Total catastrophes are terribly amusing. Any subject is subject to laughter. All those fossil fuels that we're using isn't losing if it's comedy that you're after. Do you know what a twerp is? 65 years ago he bit off buttons and taxis with his butt. A snark was a guy who sniffed the seats of girls' bikes. All true. What is the white stuff in bird poop? Don't worry. Don't worry, it's bird poop too. crazy making games. Old ones like love and hate, new ones like automobiles and credit card rates. Why don't you tell the truth for a change, like there were never any good old days? And don't look at me, I just got here anyways. Children never use a semicolon. Rules only get you so far, even the good ones. What good is education to haters of information? And people are not having as much sex as they appear. A great deal of laughter is induced by fear. And don't look at me, don't look at me, don't look at me, don't look at me, I just got here, I just got here. Can't tell the good news from the bad news. Chase away old man suicide with the blue hoose. Shoo him to the corners of the room. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Confucius says extended families like Navajos and Kennedys. So we can stop asking each other to be more people, please. Strumming, humming, succumbing to our hearts, thrumming. I don't have that sort of control. I'm simply becoming. Since becoming. And if anything will save us, it's our imagination circuits and remembering to notice. If this isn't nice, this isn't nice, if this isn't nice. I don't know what is, I don't know what is.
What? It's a girl's drink. It's got cream
it's
in
it's
it.
It's a classic girl drink.
Okay, so the next one is the twerp.
The twerp was a guy who would put teeth in the back of a taxi cab. Is that right?
Yep.
And the other kind of person was someone who would sniff the seats of girls' bikes.
Right. Twerp and snarf.
Snarf. Yeah.
So yeah, twerp uses a set of false teeth in his ass to bite the buttons off of the back seat of taxi cab.
Yeah. That's what it was.
They must be really good buttons. I don't know.
We're going to start with the Rusty Nail classic drink, Scotch and Drambuie.
What is Drambuie?
Scotch
Drambuie
liqueur.
Is a scotch and honey liqueur.
Oh, my God. Scotch with more scotch.
Yes.
Well, no. Yeah.
Sweet. That evokes the sticky leather of the vintage taxi's back seat.
Nice.
And then we're going to add a splash of unicum for a deep, sphinctery earthiness.
Ooh. What's unicum? That has a sphinctery earthy name.
Mm-hmm.
Unicum is a Hungarian herbal liqueur, kind of like a bitters, but as the name implies, it's a unique flavor. Mm. A lot of people say it tastes like dirt.
And then we garnish it with teeth,
of course. Yeah.
So during your college years, you drank like a grandfather.
Who knows Gordon Lightfoot and Sundown? No, you need to know. It's not that song. But, yeah, there's something here. She and her husband trying to track bluebirds.
hear all about it whenever I have new words to send. Carol's my typist. She lives upstate in Woodstock. We chat for hours. Oh, how I'd miss a long talk. You got any bluebirds? There don't seem to be any here. I guess they've all disappeared. Seem to bring us all to our knees. We hitched up our wagon to a horse that has got mad cow disease. This is not what I fought for. The interests of just the 1%. Although I am tired, I'm ready to get in the ring again.
I don't even like scotch. See, it's
what?
So good, it defies the genre. And that's how you know it's really good. I feel that way about Mandy Pentinkin. You know, like, I hate Broadway singing, but I love some Mandy Pentinkin.
Do you think he looks like me?
I think I should do too.
No.
Okay. I like you, but I like you separately, not because you look like Mandy Pentinkin.
Mandy
Pentinkin is a really good looking guy, honestly, I think.
Yeah.
Come on,
Inigo like
Montoya, you killed my father. You know, come on, that's really appealing.
Ah, in the day. I think, though, this person was talking about
Homeland. Oh, Mandy Temple.
You know, he's still appealing, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I like him plenty.
His singing is weird, though.
I've never heard him sing.
I love it.
You love his singing?
I love his singing. I love his performing. I love it. I think he's just, he's on fire. It's amazing.
The name of this drink is the Unfiltered Pall Mall. I don't know if you guys remember that chapter.
This is the chapter where he talks about how he's not an alcoholic.
But he is an addict.
But he is doomed to die at the hands of a cigarette.
That's the subject that Terry Rattigan wrote about with her song. Right.
Yeah.
Because it's one part tobacco-infused simple syrup and two parts scotch. Okay. And it's served over frozen pieces of coal. But it's also the fossil fuel thing, which he said America has a huge addiction
to. You really tie it all in.
Yeah. We tried.
Yeah, the cocktail has to tell the whole story. It's not as easy as writing, but...
A fire on one end, a fool on the other. You and I were destined to be lovers. Oh, from our very first kiss, I was hooked. way. It's like you were made for me. Yes, you were made for me.
Of the book where Vonnegut was talking about his addiction to cigarettes?
Yes. He'd be fun to kind of sit on a stoop with, I mean, a cigarette with. Songs are made up when you really feel like you're not bound by any truth reporting and you can just go to town. It's really fun. So I loved it. I felt like I was on a treasure hunt waiting for those phrases that were going to pop out to me. It's always fun to play your songs for an audience, but to play your songs for fellow songwriters.
That's a really great part of the book club.
Oh, it's fantastic.
It's called The German Horse, and it's an interpretation of Vonnegut's upper middle class family emigrating in a Trojan horse style hidden among the poor laborers. Instructions. Wake up in Dortmund, that's sort of the area where his family was from in Germany. Walk outside, find and rinse out an empty flask-sized bottle of Jägermeister. Fill it with a fine German brandy, maybe 8-year-old Asbach or Alt, and smuggle to America. And, you know, consume it while you're building your own brewery or buying someone else's brewery.
It's kind of a performance piece.
Yeah, no, it's a concept cocktail.
Like Abramovich would do something like that.
Yeah.
Other drunks have seen pink elephants. Tell you some news. I wanna get to you to do. You wanna get messed up? You wanna get? Give me some to burn. Put me up, I need a fix. Got an itch, and I can't quit.
In Chapter 7, Vonnegut is talking about the perils of warfare, as he often is, and he made a quote from Abraham Lincoln, who was skeptical of the motives of President James K. Polk, and who said the following, trusting to escape scrutiny by fixing the public gaze on the exceeding brightness of military glory, that attractive rainbow that rises in showers of blood, that serpent's eye that charms to destroy, he plunged into war. They're talking about the Mexican-American War. It's a bloody bit of history that was completely avoidable and a pretty sad part of American history.
Totally there. Unnecessary, and Lincoln called it. At the time, he was a congressman.
Anyway, the cocktail itself is Scotch, orange juice, and maraschino. Yeah. Because we're trying to evoke the Mexican-American War, we have substituted with mezcal. We have put in lime juice to make it kind of a margarita type of deal. So this is going to be shaken. And in the cocktail glass here. Okay, serpent's eye.
Serpent's eye.
We are dancing animals with blood silk tap shoes. I can't even say if this is good or bad. No tomorrow. There goes your junior prom. Here comes your police state. Ooh, I wonder if you should laugh. Ooh, you traded your heroes for psychopaths. They use it all up every drop. Use it all out, every drop. You can't help it, you can't stop. Use it all out, every drop. You can't help it, you can't stop. Use it all out, every drop. I don't have control. I'm simply becoming. I gave up on people. I'm a man without a country. Ooh, life is no way to treat an animal. Ooh, evolution could go to.
If you wash your hands after touching a corpse and before touching a woman giving birth, she might not die.
So, it is in honor of Semmelweis that we've put together this drink. So we decided to make a savory cocktail.
Ooh.
Kind of along the lines of a Bloody Mary. It's vodka and lemon juice and tomato juice. It's got paprika because Dr. Semmelweis was Hungarian.
Yeah, of course.
And we have Hungarian paprika.
Paprika. Thank you.
And we also have Kümmel liqueur, which is the rye liqueur. And then we're going to shake and serve it in a tall glass with a dash of celery bitters. And we're going to garnish it with cilantro. Because do you know what? Like, either you love cilantro or you hate cilantro. People who hate it...
It tastes like
soap.
Like soap.
Yeah. They say it tastes like soap.
Yeah.
Therefore, it must be in the drink about washing your hands with soap and water.
The best you can do is hope that, you know... hundreds of years after your death, that someone will make a podcast with a cocktail in your name.
And that's what we're doing today.
I guess people of Vonnegut's generation, they all cared so much about like helping people and improving the world. Mm. One of the points he made in the book was that people don't really care about that anymore.
And then there's those people who dismantle the EPA. It's a weird thing. Mm. Who doesn't want clean water and clean air?
People don't really believe in that. They buy their own.
If you look back, you realize that it's like you Reagan really was more liberal than Barack Obama.
In some ways, let's not go crazy.
All right,
let me get a few ice cubes in there. What do you think?
No.
Who wants to try it?
If you're just tuning in, this is Ink and Worm. We're having a special BBC episode, a podcast created by Charlie and Susan, celebrating Kurt Vonnegut's Man Without a Country. From their show this January. And so you can catch the podcast on wherever you listen to podcasts and hope you enjoy the rest of the show.
I understand that it is important to hear the other side and let them know that they are heard. But fuck that. Fuck Trump, fuck everyone who voted for him, fuck Fox News, fuck the alt-right, the neo-Nazi, racist, sexist, war machine, fuck them all. They don't listen to us. They don't give a fuck if we listen to them. They want what they want, and that's all they give a fuck about, so fuck them. Fuck them all. Fuck process. Do you think they give a shit about process? Do you think that when they come back, when they come to fuck us, they will give a shit about process? So why the fuck should we care about how we engage with them? Fuck them, and fuck them, and fuck them again. It has been said that the ends don't justify the means. Fuck that. There are some ends that must be achieved, and if achieving those ends means using fucked up means, then that's what it fucking means. Because adherence to means, when the ends are this fucking dire, is morally reprehensible. Like preventing the country from fucking falling into fascism, for example. That's an end of paramount fucking importance. We're talking about oblivion, and you're gonna tell me to respect the process? Fuck the process, and fuck you. 16 years ago, we thought the last motherfucking Republican president-elect, who also wasn't legitimately elected, was gonna be a shit show, but he was a fucking bowl of chocolate fucking pudding compared to the shit show to come. It is time to be intolerant. It is necessary to be intolerant. It is a moral fucking imperative to be motherfucking intolerant. So when they go low, we tell them to go fuck themselves. When they say white people are being discriminated against, we give them laxatives and force feed their fucked up shit to them with a motherfucking funnel. When they say feminazis, we say, what are you talking about Nazis? Aren't you a motherfucking Holocaust denier? And then we cut their cocks off and bury them in quicksand. The cocks, I mean. We cut their cocks off. Metaphorically, I mean. Maybe. I don't know. Let's make them believe we will bury their cocks in quicksand. Let's make them believe we will smash their fucking heads in with bricks. Let's make them believe we will burn the motherfucker down. Make them feel the fear we feel. Make them shit their fucking pants with fear. Don't let them sleep. Don't fucking let up. Keep their feet to the fire till their motherfucking feet fall off. Then watch them try to walk back to their fucked up America. Fuck them all. Fuck them up. Fuck them hard. Fuck them.
John S. Hall!
Now let's talk to John S. Hall!
I love being in the bedroom here talking with you with microphones, just like normal.
Yeah.
like we always do.
Like we always do. Do you feel more comfortable with a microphone in your hand than less?
I feel more comfortable on the stage than in real life.
I was thinking about how you write a poem, but then it becomes a song. And I was wondering about your process working with musicians in that way.
Yeah. Sometimes I write an out-and-out song.
Right.
Sometimes I write something that's kind of free verse and I have a melody in mind for it, or a melody for a chorus that mm-hmm. could go behind the spoken part. And sometimes I have no idea at all and hope that they will come up with something that I feel works and that they feel works. So lots of different ways. Sort of sometimes depending on the piece and sometimes depending on my mood or how right. inspired I am musically.
And then what was the process like when you were writing this particular one for this book?
Well, at the time that the book was assigned, I was thinking about what I'd want to say about Trump having been elected. He hadn't taken office yet. I said to a friend of mine, Jane, that I hoped that we would finally start, you know, Democrats would finally get a spine and that people would get as intolerant as the situation called for, intolerant of intolerance, basically.
And do you think that's happened?
I'm cautiously optimistic that people are wanting to fight in a way that I haven't seen really in my lifetime, except, you know, what I was, you know, I'm 56, so like I do remember a bit of the Vietnam War protesting and
right.
remember how angry people were in the early 70s. This is kind of getting there. And that makes me happy because I think it's necessary.
Cool.
The big problem with Democrats since 1980 at least has been the willingness to compromise with people who really are not interested in making the country better, just interested in aggrandizing the wealthy. You know, and that started with Reagan and continued with his vice president and then that vice president's son and now this guy. With the Vonnegut, I read it through, I think, in its entirety 2 times. And then I wrote it sort of not even looking at the book. It was just mm-hmm. sort of the way his response to the W. Bush administration is very much like mine was. And it seemed very appropriate for this time now. There's a lot of different things in that book, but that's what I sort of noticed was there was a lot of stuff about the political situation of his time, which is similar to now. Right. Only worse.
Right.
There's a drink everyone knows, which is my sister's favorite drink, Long Island Iced Tea. Okay. The theory behind Long Island Iced Tea... Okay, well, my sister's theory is it's a good deal because you get 4 drinks in one and you only pay for 1 drink and somehow it all evens out so you don't realize what a strong drink it is. So that also kind of fools you, and you end up thinking that you're drinking something much less pernicious than it actually is. In Chapter 9, which we're at now, Vonnegut discusses the PP, which is called psychotic personality. So, yeah, we decided to go with that, something that seems somewhat innocuous, but is in fact really powerfully pernicious. But we decided to try to make it just a little bit worse. So instead of tequila, we decided to put in peyote-infused tequila. We could not find any peyote.
Shut up.
No, it's okay. It's sad.
I was like, oh my God, you guys.
Wait, I'll tell you when I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Wait, I'll tell you when I'm kidding. I'm not kidding. But I'm not a twerp just because I haven't read all the books you've read. And anyway, I'll probably read plenty of books you haven't read now that you're dead. Wait, I'll tell you when I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Wait, I'll tell you when I'm kidding. I'm not. Sometimes a religion is just a painkiller. Sometimes a joke is just a conversation starter. It takes a village. I'm not kidding. Go into the arts. I'm kidding. catastrophes are funny. I'm kidding, soldiers are all babies. I'm not kidding. Truth, there's no tomorrow. Here's the truth, there's no tomorrow. Oh, here's the truth, there's no tomorrow. I'm kidding.
So thanks, Casey. This is Casey Holford, who is a singer-songwriter and has performed at several Bushwick Book Club events.
Hey, Susan. How's it going?
Hi. Was there anything distinct about playing this particular Vonnegut show?
This one was autobiographical. You know, when you read an autobiographical thing by Vonnegut, you kind of realize that all of his other books are autobiographical, too. They're basically just him talking about himself all the time. It's more like Deep Thoughts by Kurt Vonnegut or something like that, this one.
What was your songwriting process like?
For the book club, I kind of forced myself to, you know, digest the book and chew it up and then spit it out in a songwriter form. I mean, I think, as I'm looking through it, I look for phrases in the book that I like, or I look for unifying themes that I like about the book when he's talking about things that he's kidding about or that he's not kidding about. I think that was a thing that stuck with me, so I decided to make that the refrain to my song, and then I took other parts of the book that I thought would fit into that idea of things being humorous or perhaps at the same time not humorous, or like you can't always tell whether Kurt Vonnegut is kidding or not. He's always kind of half serious and half joking, so I thought that was a good way to approach it.
What's your favorite part of book club?
I think my favorite part is the shows, just hearing what everybody else has done. That's definitely like the reward for me, is that we all get to hang out and listen to this stuff.
Me too.
If it weren't fun, I wouldn't do it.
Right.
I wouldn't have been doing it all this time.
Number 10, chapter 10.
Right, which is Sappy Woman. So that chapter was the one where everyone was writing him letters and he was trying to answer her, their letters. Mm-hmm. And it starts with, a sappy woman wrote to me about how can I bring a child into this world, this horrible, fucked up
sappy
world.
Sappy woman from Ypsilanti.
Ypsilanti, right.
So it's fun just because you get to say
Ypsilanti. Ypsilanti.
Yeah. But this world was not created by God. It was created by Satan. So we're living.
So therefore, it's perhaps inadvisable to bring a child into this world because life is suffering, and it's a sad angle, but that's the angle we're playing.
All right.
He was talking about surveillance of resistors, and he talked about Abby Hoffman's practical joke, which was claiming that sticking a banana peel up your ass gets you high.
Yeah, I love that. That's so funny. So the FBI.
The entire FBI is trying this out to see if it's right. So we're garnishing this drink with a banana peel.
Okay. Excellent.
Okay. So
it's part of chapter 10, so it's legit.
All I hope all those people in LA in their cars have peyote-infused tequila, because I mean, how else are you supposed to get through that traffic?
These are organic maple bitters. But taste it. It's really very nice.
This is so good. I might need to have this every morning. I think Satan would approve.
I don't doubt it.
Never mind what paper, never mind what date, there have never been any good old days, only days. Dancing animals, when we're so confused that we don't even know how to know what's good news and what's bad news. Tell me which is worse, if it was Satan or God that created the earth.
the saints around us make it almost worthwhile. The military band strikes up and I begin to smile. Cause the blues can drive depression from the corners of the room. If that ain't nice, then I don't know what else I can tell you. There's no tomorrow, we've squandered our fuel. There's a fire at one end, and at the other, a fool. And the party is over, lights are going out. We ain't never gonna know just what this mess was all about.
For chapter 11, we have a drink called Orange Alert in reaction to one of George Bush's State of the Union addresses. Orange Alert was his own assessment of the panic the country should be in. It's a tall glass of orange juice, one shot vodka, one shot absinthe. All right, let's do it. We'll give it a stir with that palm tree.
Yep. And then Bob's your uncle.
And Bob's your uncle.
Why don't we taste the Orange Alert?
You can really taste the alert.
I saw the destruction of Dresden. I saw the city before the war. And I saw it after. Certainly one response was laughter. As Norwegians have been saying for centuries, Swedes have short dicks but long memories. It's important to understand your enemy. It's important to understand the enemy. I'm just a woman without a country, a second-class citizen in the land of the free. The enemy has infiltrated the presidency with the reality star who pays to watch Russian hookers pee. With the reality star who pays to watch Russian hookers pee. A reality star.
To an interview with Swan Dusty.
All right, let's talk about Vonnegut.
Vonnegut, yeah. It was my first Vonnegut book I've ever read. It felt really current and political. And for me, the thing that I was just so enamored by was his, like, one-page homage to librarians and about how they're the real heroes of democracy and they will hide books and protect patrons. And like most book people, libraries have like always held a very special place place in my heart because that's the one place you can always go and have resources and books. And books are there for free, which is so nice. I mentioned during my performance that I had recently come in contact with people who kind of said they never really liked poetry or didn't really get it. And then, yeah, I decided to do a dance where I discovered and defended this book of poems that I had made and then handed it off to people.
How did you choose the music for the dance piece?
For me, for some reason, I was like, I want it to be piano music. And then the pianist that I used the music from actually did a video on a glacier where he was playing a piano. And as he was playing, like, part of the glacier falls off. And it's just this really sad commentary on art and climate change.
That's really interesting. I saw that, too. That kind of relates to the tone
to
of
the book.
Of the book.
Kind of like a little bit doomsy, but also like, hey, if we get our shit together, we could change a lot of things.
How else did you feel the choice of poems related to the book?
The focus unintentionally became connection and community. It's just like, you're connected to it all. You're here on your path, but you're not alone. Basically things that really comfort me, things about loneliness, but like, never actually being alone.
I like that. And I like that we do that in book club because sometimes, you know, often writing is such a solitary thing and making something can be such a solitary thing, but then we get to come together and share it with each other and share what we made.
I think this show especially was like a case in point of how many things that people pull out that are really similar and how many things people pull out that you kind of glossed over. It was really nice.
And people really responded to your work in that show.
You know, it's visual, but it's, you know, it's a person in the space with you expressing something with their whole body. It's such a different thing from someone singing a song, you know. They're on stage in their, like, assigned space, and they pretty much stay there, and they do kind of approved of things. And that's what they do,
yeah.
And then they throw out, you know, whatever they have into the room. But then when you get on stage, it's just, you're not just throwing out a sound, you know, two people. You're throwing yourself out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like your whole physical.
And people are not sure what to expect.
Yeah.
Everyone's
and
on
it
their
really
toes.
Affects people. The other question I have for you is, would you start a chapter in New Hampshire?
Yeah.
Yay.
Bushwick Book Club is going Ivy League.
I feel like a plan.
Thanks for talking with us, Juan.
Yeah, thanks for talking with me and including me in this wonderful podcast idea you have.
I know. And then you'll be including us in your podcast. Oh, my God. It's like a mirror looking at a mirror and looking at, oh, my gosh. Wow, I'm making myself dizzy. This is great.
Cool. More coffee.
I think it's almost noon. I think we can almost switch over to liquor.
Okay, so this is the last chapter of the book. You recall how he talked about how he lived on Cape Cod and he had a Saab dealership? He thinks that's why he never won the Nobel Prize, because his Saab dealership failed and the Swedes held it against him. So that's why he never got a Nobel Prize. It might be right, because certainly he deserves one. I'm sure you know the Cape Cod is a classic drink. It is cranberry and vodka. But the only twist we have is to make it Swedish. One part Swedish vodka, absolute, to two parts cranberry juice. But we're also upping the Swede element by adding one part akavit and a dollop of lingonberry preserves. Because when you go to IKEA, you have to get lingonberry preserves.
I'm so glad that Sweden has a Bushwick Book Club.
It makes Sweden cooler than almost any place else.
Yeah, totes.
5 stars. No country for old men. Amazon Prime. If I ask my neighbor to order it, I can get it delivered for free tomorrow. But I don't want to pay for the book. I don't want to pay for the book. John said I can download it for free if I have a New York City Public Library card, which I do. But
And I don't want to read the book, I'm just going to read the review. And I'm thinking about 3 years ago when Susan asked me to do this and I said yes. And she said the book was Game of Thrones. And I said, oh man, I can't do that. I'm not into science fiction. Which is weird because I wound up digging that show a few years later. And I'm thinking about starting to read Slaughterhouse-Five, 1975, in the Leon County Public Library Young Adults Room. And I just couldn't get into it. I put it down after a few pages and I went back to reading the Rolling Stone article about Patty Hearst. Tanya's World. I never went to high school. I barely have an eighth grade education. Have I made this song enough about myself yet? Here we go. I used to sell ice cream cones to Kurt Vonnegut. When I would hand them to him, I would look him in the eye and think, I read what your son said about you in the paper. I know that you're a fucking asshole. When I tried to Google it, I couldn't find anything about that. All I could find was everybody loved him and he was sitting on a stoop on his brownstone on 48th Street eating ice cream cones. Couldn't find anything his kids had ever said bad about him, so I don't know where that came from. Oh, shit. I just scrolled up to the top. 2007. I thought Kurt Vonnegut died in the 90s. Kurt Vonnegut is the voice of his generation. This is the closest to a memoir that Kurt Vonnegut will ever write. Brilliant. Insightful. Oh, shit. This is just all about George Bush, the Iraq War. Boring, old news, who cares? It's called Man Without a Country. Not quite as good. I give it 4 stars. I like the beat, it's easy to dance to.
Anyway, this is in fact the last chapter of the book. But we did a bonus extra.
Yay!
In the afterword, he talks about his art venture. And the logo for his art venture is the Goodbye Blue Monday bomb. Considering the Bushwick Book Club was born at Goodbye Blue Monday in Brooklyn, in Bushwick, it seemed like a good time to make an honorary Goodbye Blue Monday cocktail for the Bushwick Book Club, for Goodbye Blue Monday, and for A Man Without a Country.
Right.
Obviously, this has to be a bomb shot, because Goodbye Blue Monday logo is a bomb. We've decided to get something a little blue and throw a bomb into it and see what happens. Without 1 pint of vodka soda lime. And we tinge it with blue curacao to give it the blues. Then we dump in the fireball.
Yes,
that's the bomb, because it's supposed to be evocative of the firebombing of Dresden and how the right. theory is here that a military campaign can end sadness. Yes. Now we're going to attempt to bomb this sadness away with an incendiary. This is fireball whiskey.
Whoa.
Does it chase the blues away? No, it just separates your life into blues and not blues.
Yeah.
So this is the answer to the question, and the other question is, how does it taste? It tastes exactly like you think. It's wonderful.
Thank you for listening to the very first Bushwick Book Club podcast. Find out more about us at bushwickbookclub.com and hear MP3s on our Bandcamp. We're on the YouTubes and Facebook too. Check out our other chapters in Seattle, LA, New Orleans, Portland, and Malmo, Sweden. We are going to have more podcasts because do you know how many books are out there? That's a lot of literature-inspired amazing times in our future, which is great planning on our part.
Cutting up time like salami. But instead of making sandwiches, the slices run like mercury. We have to go finding them again. There's some good news, some bad. It's hard to tell which one we've had. The aliens are going home now because of global warming. Is about to hit the air conditioner.
which means if God were here, there'd be an atheist. If God were here, there'd be an atheist. Your tantrum would have you think you're the only one that gets up. The truth is millions and millions of good Americans. System is trying to get rid of us with AIDS and flu and tuberculosis. Hurry up, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up. If God were here,
just caught the tail end of that. That was Susan and Charlie. Susan started the Bushwick Book Club, and they were just talking about their experience with Vonnegut's Man Without a Country. And we also want to once again plug their upcoming show, April 8th, 8:30 at Little Skips, How to Make White People Laugh by Nagin Farsad. I say it different every time. Nagin Farsad. Well, anyways.
She covers that in her book, so it's okay.
She does cover it, and you might call her Noodle and she might respond, but you have to read the book to understand. And I think my favorite part of the book was when she was talking about community and how when she visited Iran. Yeah, thanks. Sometimes my memory's not the greatest, but just how everyone was so like kind and generous and she felt safe, and it was just kind of nice to be like, oh, family, community.
Yeah, definitely. I appreciate the earnestness of the book, especially when comedy these days so much deals with irony and sarcasm, and like she uses some of that, but like her goal behind this humor is like very pure.
Yeah, and she wants to humanize Muslims, which is noble cause, and we support her in it. Thanks again for listening, everyone. We love you. We love hearing from you. Send us hate mail, love mail.
Especially the hate mail.
You could be the first person to send us hate mail, but you gotta act now. Once again, thanks Radio Free Brooklyn for hosting this, and I'll leave you with a word, take it or leave it, myopia.